Edwin Wintle was a single, 40-year-old gay man working in Manhattan, negotiating book-to-film deals, when overnight he became a parent to his 13-year-old troubled niece from Connecticut. It was her mother, Wintle's sister, who asked for this change. Wintle has written a memoir about how the first year of this new arrangement changed his niece's life and his own. He calls her Tiffany in the book and titled his memoir, Breakfast with Tiffany. Ed, why did your sister ask you to take her 13-year-old daughter?
In a nutshell, my sister felt that she was losing control of my niece, that she couldn't keep her safe any longer.
Safe from what?
I guess from her own inclination, she started running with a crowd that my sister felt was really dangerous, insofar as just, you know, getting in cars with older boys and staying out past when she was supposed to be out, experimenting with things she wasn't supposed to. I think my sister felt that she could no longer impose restrictions on my niece that my niece would honor, and therefore she couldn't keep control of her and keep her safe from harm.
What was the proportion of anxiety, fear, and enthusiasm when your sister asked you to take your niece in to live with you? Was there a part of you that really wanted to do this, or was this more of like a duty that you felt obliged to fulfill?
Definitely part of me really wanted to do it. I had offered sort of in an emergency situation. I said, you know, if it ever comes to it, she's welcome to come live with me. That was, of course, a little bit off the cuff, but I think it came from a place of really desiring that. I've just had an incredible relationship with my niece her whole life. She had stayed with me for a couple of summers, I think 6 weeks one summer and then 3 or 4 weeks the next summer, a couple years earlier, to study acting and theater arts here in the city. And I just am nuts about the kid. And I think there was a part of me that really wanted to pitch in, really wanted to help make a difference in her life. And then the anxiety and the self-doubt and the nervousness took over when I realized the enormity of what I had just said I would do.
What were the first things you felt you had to change about your life and about your home when you knew your niece was going to come to live with you?
Well, I knew I had to get rid of my porn collection, which is, you know, a joke, but not a joke. And I had a roommate.
How big is it? That was such a concern.
It wasn't very big. It was sort of a small duffel bag. and then, of course, I saved the best of it and gave it to a friend to hold on to, but the rest I threw away. And my diaries. I had diaries that I'd been keeping since high school, and I didn't want those just to be lying around. You know, you got to have some boundaries. I had a part-time roommate, so I had to quickly ask him to find another arrangement. But mostly it was just kind of getting the environment ready for her, you know, clearing out, getting it prepared for her to come, which was going to be in all of 1 week's time. So it was very, very quick turnaround from the time my sister asked me to take her in till the time she arrived.
Did you know how to be an authority figure? Had you ever been in the position before where you were really responsible for a young life and you had to be the one that created the limits and drew the line?
No, I have never been a teacher. I did work with kids in college, and I, of course, babysat as a teenager. But I think I have a predisposition to being somewhat of a strict parent. I think my own parenting predilection would be toward being a tough parent. I think that I would be able to impose discipline and not worry that the child was angry with me, you know, trusting that our love would ultimately carry us through. So I hadn't had a lot of experience, but I kind of had the idea that I would be tough but loving, I guess tough love.
That's interesting that you thought you would do the tough love thing, because one of the things that you were worried about with your niece was that she had close friends who smoked a lot of marijuana, so you were concerned about that. You knew that she had friends who were having sex, very concerned about that. On the other hand, you write that when you were in high school, before you graduated, you tried nearly every drug under the sun. You had never really held yourself back from sexual adventures. So you had done some of the things that you were now determined to make sure she didn't do when she was young. So what are some of the things that you told your niece about your own life that you thought would be serve as kind of like cautionary tales for her?
Well, I told her, I would say in general terms, I told her that I felt that in high school when I began to smoke more pot, that I began to lose some of my motivation. I told her that I felt that I wished I had spent more time pursuing creative things, creative endeavors, rather than just hanging around, kind of killing time with my friends. That was kind of it. I mean, and I would include pot in that and include some of the, you know, I don't think I went into too many experiences about drugs because there weren't really that many in high school. But and as far as sex goes, I talked to her about boys because I felt like I was qualified. I had one conversation with her where, you know, I said whenever I would start talking about boys, she would say, "Oh no, not the boy, the boy talk again." And I would say, "You know, Tiffany, I've grew up with two older sisters. I have a zillion female friends who have been through every kind of relationship under the sun with men. And I myself am gay, so and I dated hundreds of guys. And I had kind of been through all of that. And I was hoping that I could share my experience with her about that. You know, I know a lot about how guys operated because I'm also a guy myself. And so I would try to share that with her.
How did you handle your own private life when you became a full-time guardian of your niece? You know, did you feel as comfortable, you know, bringing men home or going out at night?
Oh, it completely changed. You know, I wasn't much of a, you know, a party guy or a man about town, really, as far as, you know, I was 40 when she moved in. I had kind of left a lot of the bar hopping and stuff behind quite a while before that. But I had quite an active social life and, you know, and I would date. And when my niece moved in with me, that completely changed. Dating was the farthest thing from my mind. I had no time and no energy to give to somebody else. So it actually didn't feel like a sacrifice because I didn't feel like doing it. But my life changed. Social life, schedule, everything changed so drastically when she moved in. But I was happy to do it. It gave me a renewed sense of purpose. It gave me a great feeling to try to do something for someone else. I mean, let's face it, I was 40, single, gay, not a whole lot of responsibilities to other people. And living in Manhattan, where we kind of get involved in our careers and involved in our social lives, and it's pursuing little hobbies maybe, it's not about other people that often. And I hadn't been doing any volunteer work for quite some time. I used to work with the elderly. And suddenly I was able to do something for somebody, and it just felt great.
My guest is Edwin Wintle. His new memoir is called Breakfast with Tiffany. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Edwin Wintle. His new memoir, Breakfast with Tiffany, is about what happened when his troubled 13-year-old niece Tiffany came to live with him in Manhattan. Her mother, Wintle's sister, suggested this arrangement because she'd lost control of her daughter. Is Tiffany still living with you?
No, she's not.
She's back with her mother?
Yes.
How did you, Tiffany's mother, and Tiffany decide that it was time to go back and live with her mother?
Well, what happened was, I think Tiffany, we went through the first year, and the book ends at the end of the first year. She'd made the honor roll. She had won an award as the best freshman writer in her class. She'd really made a big turnaround. And in the second year, things were going very, very well, very, very smoothly. And then after she turned 15, in a nutshell, I would say she kind of began rebelling against me the way she had against her mom. She began to feel that I was not, it wasn't my place to make decisions for her. And when you have a 15-year-old under your care and they feel that you can't basically tell them what to do or be the final word on things, it becomes a very untenable situation. Because I wasn't going to put myself in a situation of not being able to keep her safe because she was going to be making decisions that I thought were bad for her well-being. So somewhere in the middle of that second year, I had to begin warning her that if she kept battling me on the limits that I was setting and on the decisions I was making, that ultimately the situation might not work out. And So at the end of March of the second year, I had to follow through on that warning and insist that she leave.
What's one of the most disturbing things that happened after the book ends, before your family agreed that it was time for her to go back to Connecticut, that you couldn't, you no longer felt that you could protect her adequately?
Mm-hmm. I would say it would be that she had met these two girls, one of whom, two girls who were completely unsupervised, and my niece began sort of wanting to be parented the way these girls were being parented, which was basically non-existent, and it was causing a great deal of tension in our relationship, the kinds of freedom she was asking for, and it led to several very intense verbal arguments on our part, and she did actually walk out of the apartment one evening on a rainy January night and with a bag in tow. And I had to go to the police station, and we had to go do a drive around and look for her and, you know, put out a whatever they put out to other police officers to keep an eye out for her. That was a very, very disturbing night. The police did find my niece on the train heading upstate again, and they intercepted her and delivered her into the hands of my parents. And that was a very, very rough night. And I think it was disturbing to me that things could, you know, escalate to that degree after all the progress we had made while she was living with me.
This is the kind of thing she had pulled when she was living with her mother, that she would disappear.
Right. And this is now the second year of her living with me, and it was a result of having met these two in her high school in New York City, Lower East Side Public High School. She didn't make very many close girlfriends. It was kind of cliquey, at least to hear her describe it, and more the boys were, you know, befriending her. And it wasn't until Halloween night of her second year that she met two girls who were very much like the friend she had in Connecticut. And she met them outside of the school situation through a friend who lived downstairs in our building. And once she met those two girls, it's almost like she completely regressed into wanting to do what she had been doing in Connecticut again. You know, she kind of got a taste of that again and wanted to be running around and staying out late and, you know, going to clubs and all of that. And ultimately, that led to these arguments that we would have, which led her to walk out, you know, against my will with a bag in hand at, you know, 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. So that was a very, very disturbing dark night, as you could imagine, because I felt like so much of the progress we made had been suddenly erased.
Do you have any second thoughts about sending her back to Connecticut? Do you think maybe it would have been better for her to stay in New York even if you were losing control, even if she was defying you?
No. The one of the two girls that I mentioned became completely addicted to heroin. The other girl ended up dropping out of school. And not that my niece would have done these things because these girls had, but I felt that there was really bad news ahead here in the city. But also, more importantly, Terry, is that the choice would have been for me to let her stay and just let her do what she wants. And I was not comfortable with that. I could not be an adult living with a child of 15 who was able to do what they wanted. I couldn't live with that situation. I was not willing to accept the responsibility for what could happen to her if I were to let her do what she wanted. And there was becoming no way to not let her do what she wanted, because she would do what she wanted, if you follow what I'm saying. So I realized that was beyond the responsibility I was willing to accept.
Are you still close? What's your relationship like now?
We're very, very close. It's sort of nice because now I can be the cool uncle again because I'm not the authority figure. So there was definitely a little chilling period there after she first left. We actually got her into another program, a live-in program for a while, but it didn't work out. And then she went back to live with her mom. So it wasn't like I just sent her back to her mom. Really what I felt was that she needed more help at that point than I could give. In other words, my discipline wasn't able to break through her willfulness. And so we got her into another program, and then ultimately she chose to not stay there and move back in with my sister. Now we're very close again, and she calls me with, you know, boy problems, and we talk about stuff more like we used to. And I think she's turned a corner too, just by virtue partially of getting a little older. She's now 16, and I think she's left some of that behavior behind, and she also has seen the effect it's had both on her life in that she was forced to leave the city and, you know, not able to live with me anymore, but also some of her friends. She's seen them drop out of high school. She's seen different things happen. And I think it suddenly has become a bit more real, the consequences of behavior. It's like when you're 12, 13, 14, it still doesn't feel real. But when you're 15, 16, 17, I think it starts to become a reality. You start to realize, okay, my college choices are going to be limited because I haven't been getting good grades, that sort of thing. So I see her now as being a bit more mellow and towing the line a bit better now than she had been for a little while there.
Well, Ed Wintle, thank you for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Ed Wintle's new book is called Breakfast with Tiffany, An Uncle's Memoir.